good morning, everyone. Go Cats! I have to start off with that part.
Yeah.
So we'd like to call to order our regularly scheduled meeting of the District of Columbia Board of Pharmacy. It is a pleasure to be with you today. We have a lot going on. And so I think we'll have a pretty engaging and insightful meeting. We'd like to start off, as you know, we're in our open session. We will begin by having having board members introduce ourselves and let you know who's here at the table. We have a new board member who we're excited to introduce today. And then following introductions from the board and staff, we would like for you all as members of the public to introduce yourselves. If you are affiliated with an organization, please state that as well. If not, just give us your name. And so we'll start off by having our introductions. I'll begin with the board members. I'm Daphne Bernard, board member.
Yes. Chiquita Sanders, consumer member.
Yes.
Good morning, Alan Friedman, board member.
Good morning, Benjamin Miles, board member.
Staff present.
Good morning, Shauna White, executive director.
Latasha Gaskin, health licensing specialist.
Good morning, Carla Williams, board counsel.
I'm Emmett Gillen, summer intern.
I'm Bolu and Bile, I'm an intern.
Margaret McAlpin, summer intern.
Okay, all right. And so now we'll have members of the public introduce yourself. We'll start on this end. If you could again state your name and any organization you might be affiliated with.
I'm Kathleen, I'm an intern.
I'm Daniel Jake with Walmart.
Nicole Dornbush, GW Medical Facts Associate.
John Gelater, public.
Denise Faluco with Walgreens.
Jessica Adams with Cardinal Health.
Good morning, Lisa Lee with Express Scripts.
Good morning, Jenny Phillip with Walgreens.
Hi, Jennifer Thomas with Clarence.
Good morning, Delisa Winston with Grubbs Pharmacy.
Good morning, Fan and Lee Hospital.
Charlene Fairfax, Department of Health and Finance.
Good morning, Jonas Terry, Department of Healthcare Finance.
Shawnee Sweetly, intern.
Okay, is that everyone? Yes, and don't forget, please, especially today, and I'll explain shortly as to why, especially today, we need to make sure everyone signs the sign-in sheet. Please put your name and, again, any organization that you are affiliated with, including pharmacy school, if we got some students or interns in the room, so make sure you include that as well. For the record, we do have a quorum, and so we'll be able to conduct any business that needs to be conducted during this meeting. And so we will begin by having approval of our open session meeting minutes. We have a few months that we need to get approval on. So you see March the 1st, April 5th, and May the 3rd. And so board members, once you've had an opportunity to review those minutes and note any corrections that might need to be made, and then we'll entertain a motion to approve.
Madam Chair, on the March minutes, I don't know if you can refresh my memory or if this is written correctly. We have two motions to close the open public session portion of the meeting. So, and this was very short. There was nothing else in the minutes, so I know we had a meeting some time back where we closed an open due to an executive hearing, but or a public hearing, I guess it was. I'm not clear on how we can make that. So I'm looking at page 7. On the April open session minutes, approval of the February minutes, it says that I to approve and seconded.
Oh, what page is that?
Sorry, I'm in the middle one. Sorry, I'm in the middle one.
Yeah.
Okay.
budget, so we will make the corrections for March and April.
And then on May, so for May, was there just a minute? Because I didn't think we had the hearing.
We didn't have the hearing. We almost had the hearing.
So we open and then close and then go to executive session. Okay. So we need a motion and approve the minutes from May.
Yeah, so April and May, we're going to table the minutes from March, and like we have to listen to the tape to make sure that we're clear on the motion.
Okay, Madam Chair, I'll move that the board approve the public session minutes from May 3rd.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Discussion.
Just that motion where it says the staff is moving that the board adjourned the open session and it was held. What did you have? 7:00
So my motion was amended.
All right. So there's been a motion that's been made and seconded to approve the April and May minutes with corrections and as amended. No other discussion? Is there general consensus in favor of the motion?
So, just point of clarification. So I'm moving about the May minutes only because I wasn't at the April meeting, so I'm not moving about April.
Okay, so we're going to take two motions. So the first motion is to approve the May minutes. So motion made by Alan, seconded by Ben. No additional discussion or corrections noted. All right, so all in favor say aye.
Aye.
And opposed. And abstentions. We'll have one abstention since you were not.
Okay.
All right. So for the record, our new board member, Chiquita, right, has a statement. All right. So the motion passes. All right. So now we'll entertain a motion to approve our April minutes with corrections that were noted.
You and I were the only two there.
All right, and so we are tabling both our March minutes as well as our April minutes. So before we proceed to the report from our executive directors, if you will indulge me, I would like an opportunity to officially introduce our new member, and that is Chiquita Sanders. And so Chiquita is a graduate of Florida A&M University with a bachelor's in biology. She received her Master of Public Administration with a concentration in public management from Central Michigan University. She has served nearly a decade in regulatory public policy and in compliance. She relocated to D.C. about 3 years ago from Atlanta. So, somewhat of a Southern girl as well. And currently, she's currently as a supervisory senior program manager for the Department of Justice Law Enforcement Agency in their Security Operations Office. Prior to that, she served as a program manager for the Office of the Chief of Staff of that agency. She's received numerous awards and recognitions, including the recipient of former President Obama's Lifetime Volunteer Award. She serves as a board member for the Georgia-based nonprofit organization of Concerned Women, and is a member of several other groups, and a Lifetime Girl Scouts member.
Yay.
So I want to officially introduce our newest board members, our consumer member, Chiquita Sanders, and welcome aboard. We have a lot of great work that we are excited to have you on the team so that we can continue to make progress. So welcome. All right. Thank you. So next on our agenda is our executive director's report, and so I will turn things over to Shauna.
Hello, everyone. Good morning. So
So our current statistics are as follows. As far as pharmacists, we have 2,800 pharmacists licensed in the District of Columbia. 627 of those pharmacists have vaccination and immunization authority. We have 990 pharmacy technicians. We have 729 pharmacy interns, 624 pharmaceutical detailers, 212 pharmacy technician trainees, and we have 10 pharmacy technician training programs that are approved.
Yeah.
What was the number of detailers again?
624.
Okay, thank you for those stats.
Okay, we have a lot of updates with NABP. I'm going to let Dr. Bernard give a quick update about the district meeting.
Go ahead. Okay, great. So we are excited. We are only a few months away from our District 1 and 2 combined NABP AACP meeting. Let me start off by saying, of course, we're excited to be the host. The last time DC was the host was in 2005, so a lot has changed since that time. We had a very successful meeting then, but this one is going to be even more successful. So we're super, super, super happy to get things in place so that we can have an outstanding meeting. We have a meeting webpage, and it is kind of long, but it makes a little sense. So it's districtmeetingdc2018.com. districtmeetingdc2018.com. If you go to that page, you will see all of the meeting information. We will continue to update it once we have additional information, and especially once we've confirmed our speakers, that will be added to the site as well. But as of right now, you can go on and register, and you can go on and book your hotel room. Now, I know that's odd because most of us, we will not be staying in a hotel. We'll be commuting. But if you have colleagues that are in District 1 or 2 in any of those jurisdictions, and this is going to be all the way from territories in Canada and Florida all the way down to Virginia, West Virginia, that kind of thing. So the list of District 1 and 2 schools and District 1 and 2 state boards that are going to be attending the meeting is on that page, and it's pretty impressive. There's a lot of representation that will be taking place at the meeting. So go ahead, check out the site. Again, one of the main things we want you to do is register, because even if you're local, we still need to have you register to attend the meeting. So do that as soon as you can. You will also see a sponsorship information there. Our District 2 Secretary Treasurer is Tejal Patel. She is based out of the Delaware State Board. She is the chief in charge of sponsorship. However, we realize that many of you, being local, you have no idea who Tejal is. So if you get a letter from Tejal, you will probably read the letter and say that's nice. But I think if you get a phone call or a follow-up email or something from one of us here locally, then I think we'll stand a better chance of getting your support. DC is a bit more of an exciting city compared to where we have had our previous district meetings, only because we're the nation's capital. And so in order to have the meeting that we really have in mind for our constituents, then we need to be very aggressive in terms of fundraising and get some support. This is not a moneymaker event. This is really a break-even event, quite frankly. And so if you have not been contacted by Tejal as of yet, please know that you will be contacted from her very soon. I understand that purses are very tight, but we really believe in this meeting. This is an opportunity for all the schools and colleges that are involved in educating pharmacists in our District 1 and 2, to come together with all the state boards. And so in the nation's capital. So it's a wonderful setup for us to all be in the room, have conversations about how can we even farther advance the profession, and probably more importantly, how can we train up a pipeline of future pharmacists, and what do we need to make sure is in the curriculum as it pertains to law and so on and so forth. What are the things that we need to do? How can we work together to make sure that we are producing the types of practitioners for what we need to have for the next 5-10 years right in our district? So please attend. We're looking forward to it. Again, details can be found on our district webpage. Again, our webpage is district, I'm almost forgetting it, districtmeetingdc2018.com. If you want to contact us via email, you'll see a contact us link. It's info, what is it, info DC? I had it on the Spanish one. Anyway, you'll see it on the webpage. But if you need to contact us for more information, then just click on that link and it will go straight to our web address. I think it's info@dc2018.com, but it's on the webpage. So again, thank you in advance. We look forward to seeing all of you there. And also remember, depending on the level of sponsorship, you get comped in terms of registration. So those sponsorship letters that you have or you will receive from us will include those details as well. I will let Shauna, I guess, talk a little bit about the annual meeting.
Sure. Yes. I want to talk a little bit about the annual meeting. The annual meeting was the beginning of May, May 5th through 8th in Denver, Colorado. Myself, Dr. Menard, and Mr. Friedman attended the meeting in Denver. It was a lot of informative continuing education. We had some great student poster presentations. One of the student poster presentations that stood out was a presentation from a professor from Fairleigh Dickinson. They talked about their ESPRIT program, and it's a program that is here in the District of Columbia. I think it's screening, prevention, intervention, and treatment, dealing with getting in the community and providing support for individuals who have substance abuse issues. So that was very informative poster presentation, along with others. There were installation of our new national officers, and also something of importance to all practicing pharmacists. NABP previewed their CPE monitor app. So I thought that was something I would really like to share with all of our pharmacists here, that the app is a basic format, and then it's a paid format. The paid format kind of organizes your CEs a little bit further outline as far as the states that you're licensed in. I would recommend that everybody download the app and use the app to monitor their CEs. It's pretty cool, and NABP would like as much feedback as possible about the app. So if you haven't downloaded the app, I have downloaded the app, so I've been using it just to track my CEs. So I would strongly urge everybody to download, use it, and the more feedback that NABP gets, the more they can refine the app, so it's very user-friendly.
Well, I would just add that I can't tell you how many times during the several-day conference there was a reference to Colorado being mile high, Denver being mile high city, and they were not talking about the altitude. So as a pharmacist, it was kind of comical.
It was a good meeting. And I think, you know, some of the content, as you guys probably already know, there was a bit of discussion about medical marijuana. I know that was talked about. We had some information on, what were the other sheets? Medical marijuana? But anyway, also as a reminder to do your CEs by July the, I think the first or second week of July, so that you can get credit if you haven't done those already. But yeah, the Denver is an exciting place. They have a wonderful oyster place that that I was so pleased to find out about. But it was a good meeting, so we're looking forward to kind of following up on some of that conversation in September.
I just make one comment. One of the great things about the meeting was the opportunity to network. So we got to know fellow board members from Florida. Yes, welcome.
Yeah.
Because they sit right in front of us in the alphabetical seating in the large auditorium. But just to be able to, you know, have conversations during some open engagement periods and hear what's going on. There were some presenters from other boards that talked about practices in their jurisdictions, and really there's a great deal of advanced practices going on, and I think we took copious notes about things that we might want to consider bringing to DC as well. In other areas, it's clear that we're ahead of the game, which is kind of nice. But just that ability to network and hear what's going on across the states, I think, was really enlightening for me.
And speaking of Florida, thank you to our Florida colleagues. We had a good evening out networking with, I think there were some other individuals from other states that were at the dinner with us as well. But again, the networking piece is really important, because as a pharmacy profession, if we don't network with our stakeholders from other jurisdictions, then we're never going to get where we need to be. So those kind of things are really important. So thank you for you know, being out, hanging out with us and having an engaging evening. That's really awesome. Anything else?
I know everyone is waiting for the naloxone update, so we did want to provide some updates about what's going on, about some legislation, specifically an amendment that was introduced to the current bill concerning the Opioid Overdose Prevention Amendment Act. So everyone should have a copy of the amendment to the current bill. Moving forward in the work that we've already done with this training program, and moving forward to ensure that we roll out and can get DC up and running as soon as possible. The department is going to produce some type of policy statement to clarify and to make sure it's clear with the current legislation and what pharmacists can and cannot do. So we are looking to get that out as soon as possible, because there have been a lot of questions on when DC will be able to dismissed naloxone pursuant to a standing order.
Yeah, well, also I'll just add that the bill was introduced on behalf of the mayor, and there is a public hearing scheduled on July 11th.
Well, first, we're thankful for the progress we've made. I mean, I think sometimes on the surface, and actually that's one of the things that I'm really excited at the district meeting, it looks like we're going to have an outstanding CE session by one of our very own, if I can put that out there now, who's really going to give us a real good overview of law, pharmacy law, all the way from the local to the federal level and what the differences are is really important, because for a lot of our pharmacy students especially, you know, we have to remind them, you're not a pharmacist, you're not a practicing pharmacist until you not only pass your NAPLEX, but you got to pass the law, no matter what state you're going to be in. And that part, unfortunately, for most of our pharmacy programs, we don't really focus on the pharmacy law part. We focus more so on the NAPLEX and all that stuff. So I don't want to digress, but basically, and I think the approach is going to be very interactive and engaging with some interesting case studies that are out there. Maybe look at some best practices about just the legal aspect of how pharmacy schools and state boards need to work together to make sure from a legislative or regulatory standpoint we're prepared to really practice the profession at an optimal level. And so we're really looking forward to that program. So just some of that understanding in terms of, you know, how do we go from a law to the regulations and how they impact practice, that kind of thing. So that's going to be pretty exciting. All right, next item on our agenda is going to be a report from our legislative and regulatory... Oh, I'm sorry, I went right over. I mentioned your name. I totally went right over here. So the next item on our agenda is going to be a report from our assistant general counsel.
So sort of a segue with what you were just talking about, the presentation. So we hadn't really discussed what it would be. So I do think we can certainly add that to it, but we would definitely try to make sure it would be something fun and interesting. So my interns that are here today, I have three legal interns working with me this summer. One of the things that they wanted to talk to you about is some topics that we should cover during that presentation. And so I will turn it over to Bolin. Introduce yourself, what school you're from, and then ask the board your questions.
Okay. Hi, everybody. I'm Bolin Rubio. I go to Howard University School of Law, and I'm an intern working with Carla this summer. And so this summer, I'm taking the lead on, like, creating the presentation video about it. And one of my main ideas for the video was to do it in a newscaster format where some of the issues that are important today in pharmacy would be the breaking news of the cast. And so some of the issues that I, I kind of looked up was, of course, the opioid crisis and how, like, I guess the effect on how it's affecting people in our country. And also under that, like you guys were just talking about, the naloxone for opioid overdoses and how how pharmacists might be able to give the drug without prescriptions. And then another one that I saw was the issue of buying prescription medications over the internet and the possibility of buying fake medications and how that might even be contributing to the opioid crisis, and also how to protect people from not buying fake drugs online. And I just wanted to ask you all if there is any suggestions of topics that we could cover or, like, in the video or the presentation.
Hot topics that you'd like covered. So I do hear that we're going to incorporate in there some information about the regulatory process. So we'll make sure we put that in there. And if you have any other ideas, you can let us know. So that is a project that we think by the July meeting, if we have the July meeting or the August meeting, that we should be able to give you kind of our template for where we think we're going to go with that.
Yeah.
Hi. Yes.
When will we be able to make recommendations? Are we doing it right now?
If you have some now, if not, you can send them to me and I'll get them to both.
I was going to propose that we do some, have some topics around legislating PBMs. Because with a lot of independent pharmacies closing, the driver of that is because of PBMs taking all of the money, are not allowing some small business owners to be able to collect on dispensing fees and keeping all of the rebate money for themselves and not putting it back into small businesses. So that's just something that I thought would be a good topic since there's no regulatory requirements around pharmacy benefits managers.
Okay. You can either email me or Sean.
Okay, so does everyone in the audience, or is there anyone who does not know how to contact either Carla or Sean? Because I'm going to be calling. I'm not even going to email because I have quite a few thoughts and ideas that I would like for you to at least, you know, consider. But so for those who would like to submit ideas later, then either Carla or Shauna, that's your one of those are your contacts for consideration. And again, keep in mind, we're going to have probably 150 to 200 representatives from schools and from state boards. And so think out of the box. Think all the way from training to practice. And not practice how it is now necessarily, but practice how we want it to be. At least that's what we say. How we want it to be. So think out of the box and think about the future and what would be ideal state, not necessarily current state, but ideal state. Send those ideas, flood her, one of them, with ideas in terms of, you know, some of the topics that you think could bring them.
I was going to make a comment if anyone wants to email us for topics, they do it sooner rather than later, so within the next 2 weeks, that will be great just meeting and approaching. We have to submit the outline to ACPE for CE.
Right, and so our emails are our name, carla.williams@dc.gov, and then shauna.white@dc.gov.
Janine Phillip of Walgreens. So, one of the suggestions I would bring up is something that was brought up at a presentation, CE presentation from our NABP meeting, which then has to do with standards of care, practicing via standard of care versus the current regulatory process. So, this is something that's happening currently in Idaho. I think it's a great example with changes in regulations in Idaho that decrease. Typically decrease regulatory burdens across the board. They cut their rule book in half. So Alex Adams gave a presentation at NABP, which discussed their regulatory process. Obviously, there was a legislative process involved as well, but through it, they now have a much more streamlined regulations, and it's based on standard of care, meaning that it's based on how pharmacists should practice versus dictating what they can and can't do in the rules.
That's a very good point. Thank you very much. Okay, so yeah, again, let's just go ahead and say, what is this, June the 7th? Let's say by the 21st. By June 21st, if you could please send any topics to either Carla or Sean.
All right.
Okay.
That's it. Thank you.
And we thank our interns in advance for all this wonderful research and hard work and media production, all the stuff that you're about to engage in. Appreciate it. All right, the next item on our agenda is our report from our Legislative and Regulatory Subcommittee. And so Alan is going to provide that.
So, thank you, Madam Chair. So with regard to collaborative practice, we're waiting for, final approval so that it can be published. As a final regulation, just to remind folks, the draft regulations were approved by the Board of Pharmacy and the Board of Physicians in D.C. So we do have regs, and it's just going through governmental review, but the intent is to have those published as final, and then it will be officially implemented in the District of Columbia, collaborative practice. Secondly, there was a law passed which would allow pharmacists, and it's permissive, by the way, it's not a mandate, to prescribe birth control or contraception under certain circumstances. And the law requires that the Board of Pharmacy partner with the Board of Physicians to promulgate the regulations. So there has been a work group put together with representatives from both agencies. And we've had one good meeting to kind of just feel each other out, express some thoughts about the legislation and how we might go about working together. And I think the intent then is for the BARDA pharmacy members to kind of discuss a little bit further about how we might further that cause. And then I know Shauna's working with the executive director for the Board of Medicine to outline some future meetings. But the regs need to be in place and ready to roll by January 1 of 2019. So we've got some work ahead of us, but are confident that we can make that happen and meet that timeline. And we're excited about the opportunity for pharmacists to be able to participate in that practice. So, you know, as part of that, we'll be looking at what consent needs to be there, what algorithm needs to be developed, what potentially self-assessment needs to be developed for patients. And, you know, without going into any other details, you can sort of look at the laws to see what some of the things are required, looking at training. But those are the high-level things that the group is looking at. Okay? And then, Shauna just mentioned the naloxone. So, again, there's going to be a public hearing in front of the District of Columbia Councils and Committee of Health July 11th. So we're anxious to see the result of all that and have use of naloxone and a pharmacist be able to furnish that under standing order go live in the District of Columbia. And that is our report.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Any questions so far in regards to the report from our Legislative and Regulatory Subcommittee? Okay. All right. The next item on our agenda is the Communications Subcommittee report, and I will provide that report to you. So I'm pleased to say and really thank Dr. White, as Executive Director,
with helping to make sure that we have our NABP newsletter published. So when you get an opportunity, and again, Google is your best friend, just Google it. So all of our DC newsletters are found along with any other state newsletter on the NABP website. So if you Google NABP DC or District of Columbia newsletter, you'll see the link to take you there. So our June letter, newsletter is officially there. I double checked yesterday, so that's a good thing. Check it out. We mentioned the district meeting. You'll see the link to the webpage, and it's, I think it's hyperlinked, so you can actually get to our meeting webpage from the newsletter. You'll see some really exciting information about locations of drug take-back bins, some really good stuff that can be found there. So please check it out when you can. Again, a special thanks to Dr. White and her leadership in making sure that we use that as a tool, one of a couple of venues, to make sure that we're clearly communicating with stakeholders, our licensed DC pharmacists. So we appreciate that. So any other thoughts in terms of topics? Again, you have Shauna's email address. You can email suggested topics, or you can email me, and we'd be happy to consider those for the newsletter. In addition to that, I think it's important to communicate the next meeting. The next meeting for NABP is actually going to be in Minneapolis, if I got that right. Let me scroll back. Minneapolis, right? All right, and I was going to give you the exact dates because it's never too soon to start planning for that. So May 16th through 18th, 2019, Minneapolis, Minnesota. That is going to be the 115th annual meeting. So I wanted to make you aware of that. Prepare to be cold. In May?
I was in Minneapolis changing planes on Mother's Day weekend, and it was cold. It was 47 degrees.
Wow, okay. Which is, again, why they're going to be, and they're going to be excited, because people who in District 1 and 2 will have come to D.C. in this fabulous city, and then they got to go to Minneapolis. So we're excited about that meeting, but before we get there, we are focused on our September district meeting. And so I think right now the most important thing is for us to make sure that we are communicating with you all with updates on our district meeting that's in September. So be on the lookout for that. And again, just go to the meeting webpage and you'll see all updates there. If you have questions, comments, or anything, feel free to contact either Shauna or myself, and we'll be happy to address those concerns. Okay.
Well, I did have one comment. Our newsletter, DC newsletter, is a link on the DC Board of Pharmacy webpage that will take you right to NABP's website for the newsletter. So if you're looking for it and you're on our website, it's a direct link on our website. I think it's one of the lower links, so you can just click that and it'll lead you right to NABP's website.
Any questions or comments? If not, then we are ready for our wonderful presentation from our pharmacy intern. She is going to come up and introduce herself, and then she will give us an update on pharmacy news. So take it away.
Really?
Hi, my name is Catherine Hahn. I'm a fourth-year pharmacy student at Howard University, and I'm currently doing my rotation with Dr. Shauna White. I have pharmacy news updates on Canada Drug Pharmacy and their illegal scheme, and I have two recently FDA-approved drugs, Trogarza and Lucemara. So, Canada Drugs is an online pharmacy that has filled millions of prescriptions by offering itself as a safe alternative for patients to save money on expensive drugs. It was started in 2001, and their business model was based entirely on illegally importing unapproved and misbranded drugs, and has made at least $78 million through its illegal imports. And to facilitate its sales, Canada Drugs purchased other companies engaged in this business and used their brand names, drug inventories, and customer lists to further its illegal operations. In 2010, it came to the attention of FDA that Canada Drug Pharmacy was importing, that was shipping to healthcare providers in the U.S., drugs that were unapproved by the U.S. Prescription drugs were labeled with foreign languages and inadequate instructions for use. In order to avoid detection, Canada Drugs and its affiliation falsified forms concerning the value of the drug of the drugs shipped in the U.S. In two instances, Canada Drugs and through its subsidiary supplier, they distributed counterfeit version of cancer drug, Avastin and Eltuzan. Avastin is only FDA approved in the U.S. and Eltuzan is only approved in Turkey. And testing of the vials of the shipments, recovered from the shipment, they found out that these drugs do not contain any active ingredients. FDA does not know whether the patients actually received the counterfeit version of the drug. But however, these companies still jeopardize the health and safety of the Americans that are actually combating the cancer. Recently, the U.S. court sent Canada Drug and two subsidiary suppliers to forfeit $29 million of the proceeds of the legal scheme and fine of $5 million and probation of 5 years. In such incidents like this, stresses the importance of FDA regulation and monitoring for protection of public health and safety while helping to prevent the introduction and improving identification of counterfeit drugs into the nation's drug supply. And now, I'm going to be talking about recently approved drug, Trogarzo. This is the first monoclonal antibody used to treat HIV, as well as the first HIV therapy with a new mechanism of action to be approved within 10 years. This drug was approved on March 6th, and it's commercially available. It's commercially available now. Trogarzo is indicated for treatment of multi-resistant HIV infection in patients that have previously received several anti-HIV regimens and that are failing their current therapy. This drug is a CD4-directed post-attachment HIV-1 inhibitor that binds the CD4 receptor on host cells, and it blocks the HIV virus from infecting the cell. The dosing starts with the loading dose, 2,000 mg infusion, and it's followed by 800 mg IV infusion every 2 weeks for maintenance dose. Some of the side effects seen with this drug is diarrhea, dizziness, nausea, and rash. And this is the approval of Trogarzo is based on the results of this trial, TNB301. It's a single-arm, multi-center clinical trial, and it enrolls 40 treatment-experienced patients with multi-drug-resistant HIV who were previously treated with more than 10 antiretroviral drugs. Subjects were required to have viral load greater than 1,000 copies per milliliter and documented resistance to at least one antiretroviral medication in these three classes. And the trial consisted of three periods. Control period from day 0 to 6, during which patients continued just on their old therapy. Functional monotherapy was from day 7 to 13, during which patients received 2,000 milligrams of loading dose of Trogarzo, plus continued their old therapy. And maintenance therapy was from day 14 to week 25. Patients received the lower dose, 800 milligrams of Trogarzo, maintenance dose, with other HIV drugs. The benefits of Trogarzo was assessed between day 7 to 14 by measuring the number of HIV copies in the blood. And this is just a clinical trial result. Looking at table 4, data results showed that 83% of participants experienced a significant decrease in their HIV RNA levels 1 week after Trogarzo was added to their failing antiretroviral regimens compared to the control period. And table 5 shows after 24 weeks
of Trogarzo while they're on other antiretroviral drugs. 43% of the trial participants achieved HIV RNA suppression, defined as less than 50 HIV RNA copies per mil. And Trogarzo represents a current full new treatment, advanced as the first HIV therapy, with new mechanism of action approved in more than 10 years and proven effective in difficult to treat patients with limited options, while improving patients' quality of life with less frequent dosing, which is every 2 weeks. And now, I'm going to talk about another recently FDA approved drug. This is Lucemyra. This is the first non-opioid treatment for management of opioid withdrawal symptoms. This was approved in May 16th. It's not available now, but it will be available in August 2018. Lucemyra is used in adults who are going through a rough discontinuation of opioid to help reduce the opioid withdrawal symptoms. This drug is approved for treatment for up to 14 days, and it comes in a tablet, 0.82 milligram tablet, and the dosing for opioid withdrawal symptom is 3 tablets by mouth, 4 times daily at 5 to 6 hour interval, and max dose is 16 tablets. This drug is a selective alpha 2 adrenergic receptor agonist. It works by reducing the release of norepinephrine, which is believed to play a role in many of the symptoms of opioid withdrawal. Some of the common side effects seen with this drug is hypotension, bradycardia, somnolence, sedation, dizziness, and dry mouth. This is a clinical trial for this drug. This is a 2 randomized double-blind placebo-controlled trial supported the efficacy and safety of this drug, Lucemyra. Looking at figure 1, it is evident that patients that were on Lucemyra were more likely to complete the course of treatment compared to placebo. The patients were put into 3 different groups: placebo, Lucemyra 2.8 milligram, and max dose of Lucemyra 2.8 milligram. And you can see that the patients that were on Lucemyra, they had a higher percentage compared to the placebo groups. And in figure 2, symptoms of withdrawal were assessed by using the short opioid withdrawal symptom scores, and scores range from 0 to 30. And the higher the score, they were experiencing the severity of their withdrawal symptoms. And people that were assigned Lucemyra, they reported less severe withdrawal symptoms compared to placebo. Currently, FDA is requiring 15 additional studies for this drug to be used in children and to see the effects longer than 14 days. So it is approved for only up to 14 days now. This drug, Lucemyra, could benefit the thousands of Americans seeking medical help for their opioid addiction by helping them stick to their detoxification and treatment regimens. That's all I have for this presentation. Thank you. Do you guys have any questions?
Any questions?
No? The new HIV medication, I saw in the study that they continued the traditional HIV medications. Is that how it's intended to be given? Is with traditional HIV meds?
Yes. This drug is used with different... this is a combined drug. So they're using it with their current therapy.
Other questions? Can you pronounce the monoclonal antibody for the HIV medicine?
How do we say that?
Trogarza?
The generic.
Ivaluzumab. It was Ivaluzumab.
What is the last piece of that?
Ulic?
Does that represent anything, or is that just the continuation of the name?
It's written as dash, but when I looked it up, they just referred to it as Ivaluzumab.
I think the question is, what do you know what the UIYK may stand for?
Uh,
how this will be used in therapy. So the actual results are not that dramatic to me, at least from a standpoint of complete resolution. So where would we place this in therapy? What are your thoughts, and how much does this thing cost?
Annually, it costs $118,000 for manufacturing companies. But with the rebates, when it gets to the patient, I saw that patients would only have to pay like $25 to $35 for the copay.
So thoughts on how this would roll out and be utilized, how many people would actually be receiving, I guess, the loading and then the subsequent dose, and then do we have follow-up therapy afterward if we only see whatever 13% total neurologic blood, no virology detected. But who's going to continue to receive this at a $100,000 cost to probably Medicaid or somebody else? That's
also going to be taxpayers.
Go ahead.
Well, this is like the last option for people that have tried many antiretroviral medications that have failed what's available now, and this is like their last option
So we give somebody a trial that's meeting the first criteria, which is multi-drug resistance, and then we're going to test them to see how responsive they are based on copies of virus, and then what do we do? You know, I just think that this is kind of something that may roll out in VA. One of these drugs that we're going to have to determine how we can afford it in therapy, and how will we use it? It'll be probably, I would think, quite restricted.
And Jennifer, I don't think you had an opportunity to introduce yourself.
Oh, sorry, I'm Jennifer Thomas. I'm with Claret. I work for the Quality Improvement Organization of the District. I am a pharmacist.
I'm serious.
Great questions. I think I'm right there with you. In terms of, you know, it's the whole thing about, you know, the industry, and, you know, where there's a problem, there's also an opportunity. And where, you know, so I won't go off on a tangent. But great questions. I think I see where you're. I'm curious, though, and I don't know if you know or maybe someone else who's been tracking this. What happened after 25 weeks? Any information on that? I do notice I don't know if you saw that, Jennifer, the 13% that, you know, either discontinued because of adverse effects or deaths. But I just wonder, did you see any information anywhere of what happened after 25 weeks? I'm just curious.
I just saw that, but they said that they were just continuing on it and it maintained the level until they were. Built resistance.
Gotcha. Great discussion. More questions that we can consider as it relates to. And you did know the price, you know, for this drug that's in addition to their HIV meds is over $100,000 a year. Any other questions before? I don't want to take us in a different direction. Any other questions about the presentation or content? So I want to thank you. I think you did an amazing job. I don't know how controversial we want to get, but I think maybe one of our programming topics that we can consider is really kind of getting to the heart of some of the supply chain issues, drug cost issues, drug importation issues, because I do feel that we have had people in position of authority who just continue to remain silent at what the problem really is. One reason individuals order drugs, and I won't go off topic too long because Sean has done measurement in a second. But I think one of the problems, one of the reasons we have people ordering medicine from Canada and when it's coming in, it can be coming from all kinds of places, is because of the drug costs in the United States of America. And so we, at our District 1 and 2 meeting, that's going to be here in the nation's capital, I don't know where there's an opportunity for us to maybe have a deeper conversation about that. We certainly are going to be inviting some individuals from the Hill to at least come to our reception and engage
with us, and hopefully some of them will take us up on that. But at some point, we're going to have this conversation and have a meaningful conversation about it, because the cost is just too high as it relates to health and everything else. And so the supply chain issue and how we're tracking and making sure that we're trying to make sure that counterfeit drugs don't get into the supply chain is really important as well. That's something that you all know, I guess, the FDA has been involved in. So, you know, we probably have a lot of different opportunities for conversations at the district meeting. So I just wanted to kind of note that, because, you know, sometimes when you talk about the bigger issues, in D.C. is the prime place for these conversations. All right. Well, thank you again for your presentation. I appreciate it. If you have any other questions or comments, then you can catch her when we end the opening session and ask away. All right, the next item on our agenda, let's see. So is the May 10 NABP e-news, and out of that information, there were just a couple of things I wanted to highlight that I think might be of interest. Might be of interest. One kind of segues from what I just mentioned. That I think are worth noting. As a result of our 114th NABP meeting, we have some new officers. And so I just want to let you know who is representing NABP on a larger scale. And so our president-elect is Jack Campbell. He's executive director at North Carolina Board of Pharmacy. We have treasurer is Timothy Finsky, who is a member of the Massachusetts Board of Registration and Pharmacy. Also elected was Bradley Hamilton. He's a pharmacist in the Maine Board of Pharmacy. He's elected as a one-year member. Also Lenora Newsom, who is a member of the Arkansas State Board of Pharmacy, and she was elected to a three-year member term. And Nicole Chopsky, who is a member of the Idaho State Board of Pharmacy, and she was elected for a three-year term. And so those are some of your members of the executive, your new members of the executive committee. And if you want to get a full list of all the members, just go to NABP's website and you can find that information. One thing I thought was kind of interesting, and it made me think of another possible program and idea during our district meeting, is the FDA's Center for Drug Evaluation and Research report was released. You can access the report probably either by going to the FDA's CDER site, or you can link it through the NABP official news that can be found on their website. But in the report, there are a few areas. There were four areas that were highlighted. One is safety surveillance and oversight of marketed drug products. And for all of us, we realize that, you know, we really don't know how risky or harmful a drug is until after it's put out there and we have enough people who use it for a while and then we find out. Well, CDER is largely responsible for overseeing what happens and what safety issues we need to be aware of once a drug is actually out there on the market. So that's covered. Also, they covered new tools and approaches for fighting the opioid crisis. And it was acknowledged that we need to shed more of a light on decreasing exposure and preventing new addiction, treating those with opioid use disorder, developing novel pain treatment therapy. So there's going to be more money put into coming up with pain medications that are not opioids, or modify them, the delivery mode, so that they're less likely to be abused. And then the other focus in that area is on improving enforcement and assessing benefit risk. So believe it or not, when we get a lot of federal funding, or when different groups get federal funding that address the opioid crisis, a good chunk of that money actually goes to like law enforcement and things like that. So that was one of the four highlights. The third area was efforts to reduce
preventable harm from medications. And then the last area was continuing regulatory oversight and oversight efforts of compounded drugs. So in the report from the FDA CDER's office, those are the four areas that were highlighted. I thought that was something that as pharmacists, you know, you might want to take another look at some point at your leisure. So that's the main thing that I wanted to highlight from the NABPE news. The next item on the agenda is for any public comments. And so if you are in the audience and you have any comments, questions, concerns, matters that you'd like to bring before the board, now is the ideal time to do that. And so we only ask that you state your name, state your name, any organization you're affiliated with, and then provide your comments. So any comments at this time? Yes.
Hi, Jennifer Thomas again. I have a question for all of you about the naloxone law. And what is and the reason for what's moving forward? I know that the original law allowed the prescribing by pharmacists of naloxone. So is there some issue with whatever regulatory there or law that was the issue for kind of moving this down another path?
Great question. I'm going to defer to my two bosses up here. So, Dr. White, is there any...
I would say that, as Dr. White stated in her report, it's come from the executive branch, but that's the mayor and the director of the Department of Health. We're all under the executive branch. The executive branch has requested that the council amend this. Under the amendment, they would not be able to just prescribe, which is frankly not really within the scope of pharmacists, and that was something that came up when the bill first was introduced. But they would be able to dispense without a prescription pursuant to a standing order. That's the amendment. So whether or not council will do that remains to be seen. As Mr. Freeman indicated, there is a hearing coming up in July where everyone can testify as to your support or your disagreement with the amendment.
And the details of that hearing, I wrote July 11th. I'm assuming, is there a place that individuals might be able to go to find out the location, the time? Is that the city council's webpage?
Yeah, it'll be on the city council's webpage under the committee of health webpage.
And I think those hearings are also televised.
They are.
Good question. Thank you. Any other?
Denise Foley from Walgreens. Same thing on the naloxone. So I understand the hearing's July 11th, but from my understanding, that's not a topic that the council members have before them.
Okay.
So that was a concern.
No, I was told that there is going to be a hearing on.
Oh, it wasn't July 11th. It wasn't the hearing date that you stated earlier.
Yeah, no, there is. What she's saying is that she doesn't see it on the agenda yet. Mm-hmm. But I would say that that's subject to change. We just got word of this within the last week, so it could be that it's just not been added to the agenda. But I was told that there is going to be a hearing July 11th.
Yeah. So we got word as well that it's July 11th. I'm not sure if there's a lag on updating that information. So we're checking the website as well. So the website has the accurate information because they have to secure the room for the hearing. So hopefully it will be published soon.
Thank you. Because that was going to be my question, and I think you just answered it. So for anyone who wants to confirm that there is a hearing and the details, just kind of check back on the council's webpage, and that will have that information. So just kind of take another look as we get a little bit closer to July 11th, but just clear your calendar and try to make sure that you are available to see people.
Thanks.
All right. Any other questions, concerns, comments? Please don't forget to sign the sign-in sheet that is somewhere back there. I know Jennifer introduced herself when she came in. I thought I saw someone else. Is there anyone else who we didn't give an opportunity to state your name? And I can't thank you all enough. You know, for us to do what we are supposed to do, and that's protect the public as it relates to pharmacy practice, we really value feedback that we get from the public. So your attendance at these meetings and the questions that you ask, they really are helpful. So we really appreciate that. Any other questions or comments?
All right. So hearing none, at this time, we will entertain a motion to adjourn.
Madam Chair, I move that the board close the open public session portion of the meeting and move into closed executive session portion of the meeting for the following purposes: to discuss disciplinary matters, to seek advice of counsel to the board, and to preserve attorney-client privilege or approve settlement agreements pursuant to regulatory language.
Thank you. So there's a motion that's been made. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Discussion? And do we have another roll call? Okay. So our roll call vote, we will vote to either yay or nay in favor of the motion. So I will start Daphne Bernard in favor of the motion.
Alan Friedman in favor of the motion.
Benjamin Miles in favor of the motion.
Okay, motion carries. And so this concludes the public open session of the meeting. The board will now move into the closed executive session portion of the meeting pursuant to DC Official Code 2-575B for the reasons set forth in the motion. And so we want to thank you once again for being here with us. We will see you here next month. No, 2 months from now. What is this? June, July? In August. We will see you the first Thursday of August, which is August the 2nd, at 9:30. And that will be 1 month before our district meeting. So in the meantime, some of you especially will be hearing from